Hi, I'm Katie Whelan, and join me each week as I talk with experts around the globe about circular economy. You'll find out what's being done to make it a reality, and if it can really solve the problems it promises. It's time for Getting in the Loop. Thanks for tuning in to the Getting in the Loop podcast. I'm your host, Katie, and I'm so happy to have you join me for today's episode of Getting in the Loop, where we're getting in the loop with Ladeya Gorina-Koshir. Ladeya is a circular economy expert, speaker, and co-creator of international circular economy events. She is the founder and director of Circular Change and chair of the European Circular Economy Stakeholder Platform in Brussels. Last year, Ladeya was the finalist of the Circular Leadership Award at the World Economic Forum in Davos, being recognized as the regional engine of circular economy transformation. Ladeya and I briefly met in person at the World Circular Economy Forum in June of earlier this year, and I was thrilled to have the opportunity to catch up with her afterwards on the podcast to hear more about the amazing work that she is doing to bring people together around circular economy. In this episode, you'll hear about Ladeya's work to create a circular economy roadmap for Slovenia, and how it has been used to not just make a plan for the country, but also create awareness and buy-in for the concept. We also reflect on the importance of considering culture when discussing circular economy, and Ladeya shares some examples from her work partnering with people all over the globe, including the Nordic countries and the Americas. And last but not least, we talk about leadership for a circular economy and what it means to be a circular economy leader. This is something I was personally eager to hear from Ladeya about, as I find her to be an inspirational circular economy leader. And in the episode, Ladeya shares her thoughts about the qualities and capabilities that she thinks are necessary for today's circular economy leaders. It's a great episode, and I promise you're going to want to be taking notes, so grab a pen and paper. And towards the end of the episode, Ladeya shares a large list of events and projects and even books she has co-authored that are coming up in 2020, and I hope you'll be inspired to check them out even further. Now on to the episode. Before we get started with today's episode, I wanted to tell you about something awesome. If you're giving presentations related to circular economy, or if you just want to learn a little bit more about circular economy basics, head over to slidedeck.gettinginthelooppodcast.com to grab a free presentation that I've created based off of presentations that I've given over the course of the last couple of years. And what it is you can use it as a starting point for your own presentation. So it's a PowerPoint presentation. You can add or adapt your own slides into it, or you can just go through the presentation and learn a little bit more about the basics behind circular economy. So it's 20 slides. It starts off with why we need a circular economy, what is the concept, and how can we implement this in practice. And then at the end, it finishes with some links to different reports and other resources so you can learn a little bit more on your own. Okay, so now on to today's podcast. Ladeya, thank you so much for coming on the Getting in the Loop podcast. I'm so excited that you are here today.
Thank you for inviting me, Katie. So I'm really pleased that we have this opportunity to explore the backstage of circular economy.
Yes. And before we get started, I have to tell all the listeners that, and you as well, that I was very much in awe of what you are doing regarding circular economy. When we first met back in June at the World Circular Economy Forum in Helsinki, you were giving presentations and then headed off to, I think, Kyoto or somewhere in Japan to do some more work. And so you're doing lots of international work, and I'm very excited to talk about that more in today's episode. But before we get started in diving into the topics that we're going to discuss today, could you just tell our listeners where you're calling from?
Oh, this time I'm by chance in my hometown, Ljubljana, Slovenia, just back from Norway, heading to North Macedonia tomorrow. But I'm based in Ljubljana today.
Okay, well, it's great to catch you in your hometown. I hope you're having a little bit more daylight than we are up in the Scandinavian countries.
It is not much better than in Norway, I must say. Short days here as well.
Okay, well, that's a little bit too bad. But we're going to brighten up the day, I guess, by talking a little bit about what you're doing. And you are the founder and director of Circular Change. So I'd love to have you introduce this organization and how it started.
Okay, so Circular Change started 5 years ago, purely from my enthusiasm for circular economy. It is a private, nonprofit organization. We are Circular Change Institute for Circular Economy. And what we are doing is really encouraging people to join us on this journey towards circular economy. And what we realized is that actually we are best entry point for your circular economy journey. That is a kind of slogan that we are using. And I would like to add to that we have a council. We are not all alone. We have 5 members of the council, and the president is Janis Potocnik, former commissioner, who is a kind of circular economy passport. That is how we see him. And he's really someone who is helping us, and he's a kind of door opener also on our journey around the globe.
I can imagine that is definitely a good person to have when you're trying to open doors. So could you tell us a little bit more about how you work with organizations? Are you working with companies? Are you working with governments, nonprofits?
Yeah, absolutely. We are working with different stakeholders. As I said, it is not that we are experts in circular economy in certain areas, but we are definitely good in connecting different sectors, different countries, different cities, and so on. So among the stakeholders that we are addressing are governments, city authorities, businesses, NGOs. Then we have, of course, a lot of link to scientists and media as well. So what we do is actually curate all this process of the circular transition. And we have a kind of 4, let's say, points on this journey. First is to inspire. The second is to engage. The third is to connect. And the fourth is to act and have an impact. So this, the fourth one, is the most important. We want to have an impact at the end of our activities. And that is how we work, and we are very much purpose-driven.
Mm-hmm. And are you working, I imagine that there probably are other similar platforms in other countries, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but do you work with these in collaboration or link up with them in any way?
Yeah, that is a very good question, you know, because you have always this challenge in a way. Should you grow as an organization, as a company, and become bigger and bigger and stronger, and then this hierarchy starts to happen? Or do you connect with others who already exist on the market or who are emerging on the market? So we definitely decided for the second option. Because even I personally believe that it's very important that we maintain the identity of certain country, of certain company, and so on, and then connect and do what we can do together in the best way we both can do. So we are members of different networks. One very important is Circular Hotspots that started in Holland during the EU presidency. It was called at that time Holland Circular Hotspot, but now it became a network of several similar organizations as Circular Change. The other one is at World Economic Forum. This is the whole program called PACE. And within this are several organizations, of course, from all around the globe. And for me personally and for Circular Change, it is very important that we are members of European Circular Economy Stakeholder Platform, where I'm also a chair now. So, and there are others, organizations that we collaborate with, but I would really like to emphasize the role of the networks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe we could talk a little bit about the fact that you were elected as the chair of the European Circular Economy Stakeholder Platform, since you brought that up. And I'd love to just talk a little bit about the acronym is ECESP, but maybe everyone just calls it the Circular Economy Stakeholder Platform. Could you just introduce that to the listeners and also to me? Because I was actually, I have to admit, not so familiar about it before we had our little talk prior to this interview.
Yeah. So, yes, as you said, this is European Circular Economy Stakeholder Platform, and it was established in 2017. It is very unique and special because this is the collaboration between European Commission and European Economic and Social Committee. So they both agreed on that, that there is a need for this kind of a platform. And they opened a kind of call for organizations from civil society, so different organizations like Ellen MacArthur Foundation or Sitra from Finland, or small organizations like Circular Change. And then we have 24 members were then selected. And we are presenting this platform, but it does not mean that the platform is closed for others. So what is good to know is that this platform is available for everyone to join. If you just go to the web page and you Google European Circular Economy Stakeholder Platform, you can find the link, of course. And what we do and what we encourage everyone is, first, you can only take a look and see what are good practices, which events are going on, and so on. So this is to have an insight into circular economy community, what is happening, and so on. And the second thing is that you can submit your event, your best practice, your challenge as well, because there is also a forum where you can start the discussion. So the ambition of this platform is a B to network of networks, really to connect those that are in this circular economy, let's say, bubble, to break it and to include others as well. So if you are interested in circular economy, check the link.
Yeah, definitely. And I will have that included in the show notes on the In the Loop, the Getting in the Loop website as well. So listeners can check that out and see what kinds of events are happening and maybe even submit their own events or challenges if they have some.
Yeah, very good. They're more than welcome. And wherever I am, I encourage people, because as you nicely said, people are not aware of that, of the existence. We are still young in a way, 2 years operating. And whatever is related to Brussels sometimes sounds detached from daily life. But with this platform, it's the opposite. We are really the voice of civil society and of even the tiniest organizations. So we do encourage everyone to contribute and to get her or his voice heard. So don't be afraid to join.
Yeah. And in terms of, I'm curious a little bit, like for your upcoming chairwoman position, do you have any personal goals that you would like to have for the platform? Or is it to really introduce sort of more of this networks of networks and kind of getting a holistic picture of what's happening?
Both. So one thing is really to have this helicopter view to overview what is happening on different parts of the world, not only in Europe. So I already proposed in my previous mandate, yes, we are here in Europe, but talking about circular economy, global leadership and everything, we should be open for the others. So this is something what we definitely are. We are not closing ourselves for anyone who is not from Europe. And already in, last year, for example, one topic that I was particularly keen of was linking creative industries and circular economy, because for this circular transition, we need new solutions. We have to be innovative. We have to be creative. And it's very good to encourage those creative people to join and to participate in these processes. So that was, in a way, my topic in a previous mandate. But what now with the second round, and we are growing in a sense that we are getting more mature and wise, hopefully. What we would like to do now is really to organize different, let's say, working groups. And we proposed some topics like circular tourism, again, circular and creative industries working together. Then, of course, a topic related to plastics, to the development of cities and so on. So to be even more grounded and to bring concrete solutions related to this topic. So we will, as a platform, in 2020, we will be even more operative. If we were more on this level of collecting information, of encouraging, now we are more to the ground, and we would really like to work on particular topics and then, of course, nourish the dialogue with European Commission, because as we know, now the new Commission is coming, new Green Deal is coming, high goals and ambitions for Europe as the continent regarding circular economy, and here we are to really participate in this process as well.
Mm-hmm. And so with these working groups that are being put together, if I'm understanding correctly, mm-hmm. is that something that, for example, listeners of the Getting in the Loop podcast, if they're working at a organization or at an educational institution, is that something that they could also contribute to?
Absolutely, yes. So I would suggest, because now we are working on setting or putting these working groups together, and then we will appoint a leader of the group, so the one who will coordinate the whole process, and we will publish this on the webpage. And if someone is, for example, interested, as I said, in circular tourism, he or she can follow it and join and get some more insights and contribute with his knowledge as well, of course. And another thing that is very much in the focus and will be for the next year are national roadmaps, because we realize that they're a very important document, not only regarding the paperwork, but more the process, how the countries are approaching these roadmaps. And there will be the whole working group working on that, how to encourage countries to work on their national roadmaps. So this is also something what might be interesting, because you cannot just copy paste or prescribe how to do it in one country or another. It is more about, let's say, those important points that are needed to be fulfilled before you can start the process, and then to navigate, to help you navigate through the process. So this is also something what we are now working on, and what will be in the focus for the next year.
Well, you've made a great transition to roadmaps, because that's actually what I wanted to talk to you a little bit more about as well, because you were the leader for like the working on the roadmap for a circular economy in Slovenia, which, correct me if I'm wrong, was this part of circular change?
Yes, exactly. You're right. We were working on that. We were coordinating the process, and I was one of the co-authors. And again, I have to mention Janez Potočnik and my colleague from Circular Change, Niko Korpar, who was also engaged. So the three of us and the other consortium as well. And it was very, very interesting process, and we have learned a lot. And it was very special because it was for Slovenia, and we are a country of just the right size, 2 million people only, for the listeners to imagine that it is not even one big city, less than that. So our approach was different from the approaches, previously implemented in Denmark or in Finland or so on. So it was very much bottom up. And it was great experience, and we have learned a lot, and we are sharing now this practice. And also what I mentioned before, encouraging others that no one is too small, or no one is not important enough, or not, I don't know, however. So this is something what is really is helping everyone and enabling every or city or nation to find out what they're good at and how they can proceed in the circular transition.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious about how you went about, you said you were doing something, you were doing more of like a bottom-up approach, but could you expand a little bit more on how you went about actually shaping the roadmap? What kinds of people did you talk to, and what was kind of the goal of putting this together, other than obviously making sort of this roadmap for circular economy in Slovenia?
Yeah. What was specific? Yes, as I said, we did not have, there was no funding for a particular research that could be done previous to the process of road mapping. So because we didn't have any big consultancy house that would provide us the data or any inputs. So mm-hmm. what we did is that we really collect what existed and then interpret that. But therefore, we focused more, as I said, on this bottom-up. What does it mean? We've got 14 consultations in different cities, in different regions of Slovenia. We organized workshops there, and really encouraging everyone from SMEs to NGOs, farmers, whoever attended, to say what they see is important for them to join the circular transition, what are the obstacles they're facing, why they cannot move forward, and on the other hand, what is already there, but we are maybe not even aware of that. So this kind of mapping was of crucial importance, and out of that, we created first regional roadmaps or regional kind of analysis of what we have as in every region, what counts. And then out of that, we made this national roadmap. And the aim of the whole process, I would like really to emphasize that the process is more important than the document as such, was that we raised the awareness very much all around Slovenia, because when we started, it was circular economy, this is about waste management, and this is something for NGOs. When we ended the process, it was very clear that it relates to business very much, that it is a very systemic topic and very much related to the national strategy and action plan. So I must say that that was already something what was a tangible result of this process. And it took us 9 months only. I would say that it was short period from starting from the scratch to introducing the final version on the roadmap. And what we did is that we introduced on one side 4 priority areas for Slovenia and on the other some guidelines for the circular transition for the government. Because as we know, everything is very interconnected, interdependent. And even for the ministries within the government, it cannot be that only one can take decisions, but it has to be coordinated among them as well. So those guidelines were then introduced to the government and to other stakeholders, and we introduced the roadmap as the document at the 4th conference, a circular change conference, together with with other roadmaps. So we invited also the countries that already had roadmaps at that time, and we've got a very vivid discussion about that, what they mean, what they achieved with that. And from there on, things started to roll even further.
Wow, that sounds like a great session. That was at the Circular Change Conference. Is there a recording or some sort of outcome that was publicly available about that, or was it sort of?
Yes, of course. This is also something what we, a Circular Change, are organizing. So this year, next year, in 2020, we will have the 5th edition of the Circular Change Conference, and it was recognized also by World Economic Forum as one of the most impactful events on circular economy. So every year we have more than 500 participants from around 30 countries, really globally, and around 50 speakers. So it is really a very vivid event. And 2 years ago, as I said, the roadmaps were introduced. And if you go to the Circular Change webpage, you just Google again, circularchange.com, you can find the outcomes of those conferences. And there is also a list of speakers and so on, so you can get an idea about what was going on.
Brilliant. I'll have to dive into that in a little bit once I've maybe finished my PhD. I'm curious, in terms of the roadmap, you introduced something called the circular triangle. Could you describe that to the listeners?
Yeah, this is a model that we introduced in our roadmap. Circular triangle already is announcing something, so 3 angles of the triangle. Because when we are addressing circular economy, most of the focus used to be on this economical shift and on the importance of this change related to the economy, to the business sector and so on. But while we were working on that, we realized that it is very important that different sectors and segments really collaborate if we want this change to happen. So therefore, one angle is called circular economy as such, and it refers, of course, to the business models and to this transition. The second angle refers to circular change as the process, so that has to be very systemic, holistic, and interdisciplinary. And the third, which I love most, is called circular culture, because we realized that the change, of course, cannot happen if it is not embedded in our culture, if it's not based on our values, because it is a big difference between what we are preaching and what we are actually doing on the ground. So you can say, yes, we would like this change, but then when you have to implement the change, you know how it goes. So if it's not something what you resonate with, what you identify with, this change cannot happen. So we focus very much on this part. And this is also what we are now working on with other countries. As I said previously, even within the European Circular Economy Stakeholder Platform, we would like to emphasize exactly this angle of the approach towards circular change and circular transition, to understand different culture, different heritage that the nations have, and then implement it according to their value system, to their culture.
Mm. And yeah, this makes me think about, because you've now, being in Slovenia, I would classify that more as Eastern Europe, but you also have had connections to Western Europe. And of course, the world outside of Europe as well. But maybe just, I would like to talk a little bit about your experiences, you know, with circular economy globally, but maybe we can just first start with seeing about your experiences with like Eastern Europe versus Western Europe, and if you see any differences with how circular economy is being understood and adopted in these two spots.
Yeah, very interesting question. Thank you for that, because Slovenia is geographically positioned between East and West, and it is somehow in our DNA and in our history as well that we were bridging East and West. So maybe to say our neighboring countries are Italy, Austria, Hungary, Croatia. So we are really west-east and we have Adriatic coast very close. So from this perspective, based on our experiences and on our history, somehow we understand, let's say, Western culture and the Eastern one. And what is coming out now is when we are working with the countries, let's say, of Western Balkans, like Serbia, Montenegro, and even further on, we realize that it is very important to understand what circular economy means for them. Or you mentioned before also Eastern countries, so those that were actually under communism, you know, and that experience that system. So what when you say circular economy, let's say in Bulgaria or Romania, they automatically reflect to something what reminds them on the times when they could not afford to own things. So if we only take in account, let's say, sharing economy, for us or for Western society, it's something nice and it is something what you're looking for. But if you mention that to someone who was not allowed to own something, then it's not so nice and it is not something what they resonate with. So here you can see these differences in the approach or in the understanding of the concepts, you know. And it is not that people would automatically say no to this kind of models. It is just how you introduce them. So it should not be prescribed, or it should not be set like something what you must do. It has to be based very much on the self decision making. So if you decide to share your car, that's fine. But if you have to share your car, it's not so nice. So here I see this may be small and on the first sight unimportant differences, but when implementing certain models, they're of great importance. And here, That was one illustration of East and West, and we can find more. But here we come to this part that is related to the culture and to the history, and which does which is important actually when talking about circular economy.
Mm, yeah, and I can see why this point of circular culture and the importance of thinking about culture when you're talking about circular economy is one of your three points on the circular triangle that you talked about earlier. I'm thinking about your work globally. You've also been doing work with Nordic culture, Nordic countries, and then yeah, Latin America. So those are very different, I would say, from a cultural perspective, and also thinking about the history and the societies and traditions. Could you tell us a little bit about how they approach circular economy and what you're seeing from these different yeah, parts of the world?
That is what I love about the work I do, because you get in contact with people all around the globe and you learn so much. You know, I think that the circular economy is really about learning and about listening to each other, hearing each other, understanding each other. And if we take, yes, I'm just back from Norway, because now with Norway, somehow we work more in the last month, and other Nordic countries as well. And as an outsider, you know, when you come, when I'm in Norway, of course, I perceive Norway completely different as someone who is living there. The same is if someone comes to Slovenia or so. You always have different glasses on when you approach different countries and cultures. So what I realized and what I liked about Norway particularly is this transparency and trust that is present in this country, you know, again, because of the history, because of the economic situation and so on. If you're living there, maybe you don't notice that, but this is a very valuable capital, because based on this trust, on this transparency, you can build different relations than in a case that there is this instability and fight for daily, I don't know, salary or whatever. So regarding Norway, I think this is very, very valuable capital. And now to Brazil and to Latin America and Chile, we discuss with them, but let's focus on Brazil, because there is very strong organization, Exchange for Change, led by another enthusiastic lady, Beatriz Luz. And we are together in previously mentioned Circular Hotspots Network, what makes us really more connected. So in Brazil, you have a completely different situation, because it is huge country on one side. On the other, the economy is far away from the situation that we are facing in Norway. But there is this, you know, enthusiasm of those people. So the big scale market is huge. Then interdependency among different organizations and this globalization and impact of that. So what if I compare the, let's say, Circular Norway as organization in Norway and Exchange for Change as organization in Brazil, we are trying to find common denominators for this circular transition, and we always come to something what brings us together. But as I said, the capital we take from Norway and the capital that we take from Brazil, these are different kinds of, let's say, social capitals. On one side, this trust and stability. On the other one, this enthusiasm, creativity, energy, you know. And when you make a kind of a cocktail out of that, we can learn from each other and encourage each other through that. So this is something very, very exciting. And if we go back to that, then how to evolve the whole transition in one country or another, you have to base it exactly on that. So the model that can work in Norway cannot work in Brazil, you know. So this is what is important, that we do understand these cultures, that we understand what are the ingredients needed for circular transition, but then we adjust everything to the local market, to say so.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you see good examples of this, like, or maybe I would say a good example of this in practice is what you're doing. So maybe you could share some, maybe a tangible example, or with working with like a company or a government, like in these places, to sort of break it down further.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one interesting company that we are working with is Aquafil. We are working together now on European project called Effective. So I invite everyone who is interested in that to Google again Effective European project. This is focused on bio-based solutions for fibers and plastics. But back to Aquafil, and initially to their very well-known brand, which is Econil. This is 100% nylon produced from fishing nets and from carpets. So here we have a very interesting situation. This is Italian company operating globally. They have company here in Slovenia, and they're working with Norway as well as with Brazil. So because their source, the input for this 100% recycled nylon are fishing nets. And they are harvesting for these fishing nets all around the globe, and they're collaborating with Norway as well as with Brazil. And what is nice is why I like this Aquafil case of Econil, is that when they decided for this, let's say, circular journey, they didn't know where they're heading, and their value chain changed completely. And I like to use this example because in circular economy, once you decide to change your business model, you never know what will come out at the very end, because this is really a process where you are learning, what you are finding out, what kind of partners are needed. And in case of Aquafil, they ended up with partners like fishermen, you know, and they have to train them how to deal with saving these fishing nets out of the water. Then they realized that there are some animals like turtles and others that are kept in those fishing nets. So they started to collaborate with a London zoo, because they needed knowledge how to save these animals, and so on and so on. So this is something very excited about these circular business models and about these journeys and about the change of the value chains into completely different value systems. And here you see how global stories can become a reality.
Wow, that's really a great example. Who would have thought that you would be making, you know, textiles and then having to become trained in turtles. So
yes, very interesting.
Yeah. Okay, so we talked a little bit about culture and the differences in cultural perspectives and the importance of thinking about culture when we're talking about circular economy. And the one of the other points of the triangle that you talked about earlier was about implementing change and the process of implementing change, which makes me think about leaders, and because one of the ways to bring about change is if you have a strong leader. And I think it would be great to talk to you about leadership, because next to your position as the chair of the European Circular Economy Stakeholder Platform, you were also the finalist for the Circular Leadership Award in 2018 at the World Economic Forum in Davos. So I'd love to dive a little bit into leadership for the circular transition with you, because in previous episodes of the Getting in the Loop podcast, we have touched upon leadership for a circular economy, with the most recent one being Dr. Wayne Visser. I believe it's episode 27, and I'll have the link in the show notes for those who are interested. But on that episode, Dr. Visser talked about his own research and discussed four types of leaders for sustainable transformation. So I'm curious to hear your practical side of things and practical experience regarding leadership and circular economy. To start us off there, what kinds of skills and capabilities do you think are necessary for people who want to act as leaders for circular economy change?
Yeah, I think that leadership is of crucial importance, and it is really amazing how this understanding of leadership is changing, actually, and what are those, as you said, skills or even better capabilities that we do appreciate. And from my personal experience, is ideal. It does not exist, but it would be ideal that self-realized people are the leaders of the change. So those who really feel that do not depend on those external factors, but that they can lead by example, you know, that can lead on the purpose they realize and so on. So I think it's very important. So the people that are, if not already self-realized, which is very spiritual already, but at least fulfilled, you know, because once you are fulfilled, or you feel that you live your purpose, then you are not afraid of losing anything, and you become capable to collaborate. Because as long as you think that by collaborating, by working with someone, you will have less, or that you or that the competition will take away something from you, you are not really opened or mature enough for this kind of collaboration. So this is for me essential, that those whatever, whether these are organizations or whether these are people by themselves, that they have this inner strength and trust and capability for collaboration, which is super important. Then I would say to characteristics. So one thing is important is that you have the sense for community. that it is not about me and myself, but it is about you and me and us and ourselves. Because if you start from this perspective that you're doing something what is good for you, but for community as well, it is very much different as if you do just something for yourself. And here I see the importance of empathy, of inclusiveness, creativity. And then back to my experiences and back to my nature, because I'm very dynamic, I'm very action-oriented, very communicative, extroverted. But then you realize that you have to be persistent, that you have to be patient, you know, that things do not happen overnight. So it is really exciting. And maybe this persistence is something what I see as common denominator among us who are somehow in this circular transition, or that are, let's say, leading or at least enabling this change.
Mm. Yeah, I would imagine, especially when we talk about circular economy, it's so such a big topic and so interconnected, as you said, with many different aspects. Thinking back to what you were saying when you were giving guidance to the different government stakeholders in Slovenia, and about, you know, how their decisions would affect, you know, the other ones, and how they couldn't maybe take decisions without affecting the other stakeholders regarding circular economy. I think, yeah, the persistence is one of the key skills that you would, or maybe it's not a skill, but it's something that you have to have in order to talk about circular economy and to really be doing something that doesn't have this return on investment maybe for a long period of time. So how do you stay motivated when you might meet people who are, you know, challenging the idea of circular economy, or you know, thinking that, well, this can't happen or it won't be for a very long time?
Yeah, that is happening all the time, actually, that people are a little bit, how to say, skeptical, or you meet this kind of people and they ask, yeah, why are you doing this, or why should we change, or so on. But back to what you said before, I like very much the quote of Albert Einstein, you know, because he said, I have no special talents, I'm only passionately curious. And I can say it for myself as well. I'm passionately curious, you know, and when I'm trying to find out this life balance between work and leisure time or whatever, I must say that there is no border between that, because I'm really curious and I'm so enthusiastic and I'm so grateful that I have the opportunity to meet fantastic people, to learn from everyone, you know, because it's not that you can learn only from a scientist or from CEO. You can learn a lot from a very simple farmer, or just recently now when I was in Bergen at this great event of the Chamber of Commerce, the other day I've got a great guided tour from the representatives of their waste management organization. So I'm interested in all parts of, in all segments, in all stories. So this is what keeps me awake. And on the other hand, curiosity on one, and on the other, this feeling that we can have an impact, even if it's very, very small, but still by doing something, by connecting people who can work together better than they would if you wouldn't connect them, that is something what I find so rewarding. And this keeps me going on, because then you see that one dot and another dot, and as Steve Jobs said, connecting the right dots, then it becomes more powerful and impactful. So this is what I am really passionate about.
Yeah. Well, I'm certain that we could be here all day, but I'm conscious of the time because you are a very busy woman. So there's a couple of things that I would love to ask you before we end this episode. And one of them is about what the new year, you know, 2020 looks like for you, because from our exchange before this interview, it seems like you have a lot of different things happening. Because first, I think you'll have a book released in the autumn that's called Kyoto Manifesto for Global Economics, I think number 2, and that's going to be published by Springer. Maybe you could just tell us a little bit about the book and who you think would benefit from reading it.
Yeah, I'm very excited about this book. So Kyoto Manifesto for Global Economics, number one, has been already published, and it is a great book. You can take a look at it. It is very holistic approach, and it was published by Springer, as you said. And I was invited by the team of the Shisha University in Kyoto. Therefore, I spent 1 month during the summer in Japan at the university working with amazing team. I wouldn't say only interdisciplinary, but really transdisciplinary team. And we were putting together the concept for this book, Kyoto Manifesto 2. It is based very much on humanity. And what we want to bring with this Kyoto Manifesto 2 is what we discussed today as well, is that this circular transition and the implementation of SDGs, of Sustainable Development Goals, is only possible as if we as humans do wake up and, as we said before, if we find this inner strength for the change. So it is very different in, I don't want to use this word developed or underdeveloped word, but in different countries around the globe. And if we want to survive a civilization, this is what is needed. And in this book, we are exploring that, how to approach, what kind of changes are needed from very different perspectives. And one of the leading authors is, for example, Tomo Yamashita. He is a great musician and composer from Japan. And on his concept of polyphony, we were working on that and developing out of this kind of approach and inputs for the leadership needed for this global transition. So why to read this book is to get inspired, to realize that you count, no matter whether you are a mathematician, physician, a psychologist, economist, a student. So everyone has her or his role in this transition. And by joining forces and sharing these different approaches and knowledges, we can co-create the concept for this, let's say, global leadership that is needed for the global transition towards more sustainable society and economy.
Yeah. Wow, that sounds like a very inspiring book, and also maybe a good way to think about your part of the circular journey. And it makes me think about, so that's next autumn, I believe, in 2020. But then you also, and you hinted at this already, you'll be hosting the 5th Circular Change Conference in September of 2020. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, a lot of things will happen before that, yes. But the 5th conference, this is a kind of jubilee. Yes, it is something, having the 5th event. And it will be connected this year with BLED Strategic Forum, which is a kind of Davos of, let's say, Central and Eastern Europe. Because what I think is that collaboration is very much needed and that we have too many events. So I really try to walk the talk. So we decided to put these two events together under one umbrella and really to bring an insight into that, first introducing also, as we mentioned now, the principles of Kyoto Manifesto for Global Economics. That is one of the topics. But the other thing is related very much to what new European Commission is bringing and what we have to embrace. So how to work on the ground, how to even more support the business sector and to see how to link different, not only initiatives, but models that do already coexist. So we will be very practical in a way. And everyone is, of course, invited to join us. This will be September 1st in Slovenia, BLED. And we will publish this on our webpage, Circular Change, at the end of the year. So follow us and make September the 1st the day to visit Slovenia.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll have to check that out, and I'll be sure to link that in the show notes once the website is up and announced. Before I ask the final question that I ask all of my guests, I just wanted to ask you, Ladea, is there any other upcoming projects that you'd like to share? I know you're doing so much, so it's probably impossible to touch on all of them in this short amount of time, but any ones that stick out in particular that you'd love to just let the Getting in the Loop listeners know that you're working on in 2020?
Yeah, I would just like to inspire the listeners with brief overview of what is happening, and then they can see where to join and participate or what can inspire them further on. So back to European Circular Economy Stakeholder Platform, in end of January, we are organizing a breakfast with members of European Parliament to foster this collaboration with them, because we find that it is of great importance. In February, another interesting event, 100 years of Svalbard. This is the most northern island of Norway, where they experience what climate change means very much. And we will have conference there. This is organized by Norwegian friends, of course, with Circular Norway and the others. So you can see something very, very different is happening. Then in March, another interesting event on circular tourism. As I mentioned before already, this is a topic that we are focusing on as well. There will be a conference in Ziel am See in Austria. In March, another interesting thing, creative and circular, what we started last year with our partners from Serbia. And we are introducing this as designers of Western Balkans on Milan Furniture Fair satellite. So you can see that we are touching different areas. I will not go on because we can talk forever. But just to give you a kind of spirit and a kind of taste, what is happening, and that really in every segment, every sector, there is opportunity for more circularity and for more sustainable business.
Yeah, I love it. You're definitely walking the walk and trying to make an inclusive circular economy. So I'm very inspired by our discussion. And I would love to ask you the question that I ask all of the interview guests at the end of each Getting in the Loop podcast episode, which is about the game that I created about circular economy. So the game is called In the Loop, and it's a serious board game where the players are manufacturers and they have to produce products and acquire the materials to make their products. But there's different events that are happening as the game goes about and as you play the game. And these events are changing the market conditions of the game. So sometimes materials aren't available, or sometimes if you are putting a product into landfill, you have to pay a fine for extended producer responsibility. So often these events are inspired by real world happenings. And in the past, guests have linked these events for a vision that they have for the future. So my question to you, Ladeya, would be, what kind of event would you want to create for the In the Loop game? So what kind of topic do you think this your event would focus on?
Because we were talking a lot about values and different kinds of capital, I would tackle this one, because now financial capital is overvalued. So what I would change is that in your game, all of a sudden, the prices go up, but not for what we would expect, but the prices for human capital and for natural capital. So let's see how then the game can change. And if this is not enough, then we can add externalities and include them into the prices. And most likely the global map of the key players will change a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that would be a very interesting shift for business and for societies if that was to happen.
Yeah, let's try. Yeah. First in your game, and then let's implement that in practice.
Yeah, we'll test it out in the loop first and see how it
very
goes.
Good.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Ladeya, for your insights on culture, on leadership, and of course, circular change. You have given me a lot to think about, and also have encouraged me to stay passionately curious about this topic of circular economy. And I just can't thank you enough for coming on the Getting in the Loop podcast and talking today.
I would like to thank you for this highly inspiring conversation. Thank you very much. And I wish you all the best. And I'm looking forward to learn from you and from your doctor thesis a lot in the future. All the best to you and all the listeners.
Thank you, Ladeya. And just before we go, where can the listeners go to learn more about you and the topics that we discussed?
Oh, yes. We have webpage, circularchange.com. And here you can follow our events, activities, and so on. Then I would definitely recommend circulareconomy.europe.eu. This is from for Circular Economy Stakeholders Platform. Please do contribute, participate. And Circular Change Conference as well. So once you Google Circular Change Conference, you will find out how it goes and how it was from the first to the fourth edition. But of course, feel free to contact me as well via join@circularchange.com.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much. I'm so glad that we were able to connect and finally have you on the Getting in the Loop podcast.
Thank you for this opportunity. And as I said, all the best. And let's, for the final thought, I really like to make playgrounds out of the battlefields. So let's work on that.
Yeah, I like that. Is that a quote by you or is it by someone else?
I think that this is mine, but you never know because ideas are all around and I'm using this one now for 3 years, but maybe someone somewhere else got it as well. So I'm willing to share it with whoever that was. If not, then you can use it freely.
Okay. Well, I'll associate it back to you then.
Okay.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. For show notes and links, go to our website at gettinginthelooppodcast.com. And while you're there, subscribe to our mailing list to have new episodes delivered to your inbox every Monday. See you next week.